Welcome to another episode of Viatorian Voices, Conversations on the Way. This episode is the first of what we hope will be many episodes that take a longer look at important ideas from our Viatorian community life. We'll call these episodes Roundtables on the Way. Our intention is to gather multiple members of our Viatorian communities from time to time to have more in-depth discussions that explore things a little further than we can squeeze into the usual 15 minutes. For our first installment, we bring you a panel discussion from a Viatorian Young Adult Ministry event. Our monthly young adult gathering, Exploring God's Invitation, in June looked at discernment from a few different Viatorian angles, namely the perspective of three Viatorians. Brother John Eustace, CSV, professed first vows in 2005 and perpetual vows in 2008. In 16 years of religious life, John has worked in Viatorian parishes and schools, both in the U.S. and in Belize. Most recently, he served as Vice President for Viatorian Mission and Identity at St. Vider High School in Arlington Heights, Illinois. John will soon begin full-time divinity studies to prepare for ordination to the transitional diaconate and then priesthood in a few years, and continues to serve the community as Director of Vocation Ministry. Brother Peter Lamick, CSV, professed first vows in 2016 and perpetual vows in 2019. In his first 5 years of religious life, Brother Peter has served as a coach, teacher, and learning specialist at St. Vider High School and Cristo Rey St. Vider in North Las Vegas, Nevada. Brother Peter is returning to St. Vider High School to teach and coach for the 2021-22 school year, and he's also an alumnus of the class of 2007. Brother Ryan McMahon recently completed his pre-novitiate, a year of intentional community life and ministry with the Viatorians, in which he was able to more specifically discern that God is inviting him to religious life. We are excited that both Ryan and the Viatorian community will continue this discernment and formation as Ryan begins his novitiate year. During that time as a novice, Ryan will undertake more intensive prayer and study and more deeply explore Viatorian religious life, with the possibility that he and the Viatorians will discern that he may profess first temporary vows at the conclusion of his novitiate. Please pray for Ryan, for his discernment, and for the Viatorians. I'm Dan Masterton, the Assistant Vocation Minister, and it was my pleasure to moderate the discussion between Brother John, Brother Peter, and Ryan for our young adults. Here's the conversation we shared that night. We hope you enjoy it.
Maybe it would help if each of you guys did a brief thumbnail version of how you came to begin to discern religious life, which is the vocation that you guys are exploring or living in. Just as a way to help people find resonance with where they're at in their discernment. So maybe we'll start with Brother Peter. You guys just give us a brief version of your discernment background heading into religious life, and we'll take it from there.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of looking back, and I've had a lot of opportunities to, of course, reflect on trying to kind of identify those moments in my life where I thought God was really trying to invite me into this way of life. And in a way, it was these kind of small things over time, and then they became a little bit bigger and kind of some bigger moments when I was in college and after college. But one of the first really big moments for me was when I was a freshman in high school, and it was the freshman retreat, going from eighth grade to freshman year. And it was this kind of day-long experience. And I remember it was the first kind of time in my life where I had this kind of recognition, oh, my faith is really important to me. I didn't know it was that important to me. And the retreat itself was kind of run by the upperclassmen, the juniors and seniors, and I had some really good small group leaders. But after that, when I was in high school, my parents really stepped back, and I had to make a choice every Sunday about whether or not I was going to go to Mass. And I did. And I really enjoyed going to Mass, and I felt fed. I felt nourished. My parish was St. James in Arlington Heights. It was something I looked forward to. And throughout high school, when I would get there kind of earlier on a Friday, I would go to the morning Mass. And not to say that I was better than anyone who wasn't there, but I also recognize it's interesting that I'm here and I'm with a lot of adults. And it's like me, the student, and like 10 faculty and staff. And it's, this is kind of interesting. So even early in high school, definitely St. Vider High School and the kind of the way they do ministry had an impact on me. So that's kind of like, I think, the first big start.
Brother John.
Yes. No, I think back to, there were basically two different times in my life where the possibility of serving the church in a professional or a official sort of way came about. One was in fourth grade. We were living in LaSalle, Illinois, and there was a Vincentian priest who is a local vocation from there who came and did a parish mission. And afterwards, I was just so enamored by this guy. And I guess this is more from what my family was telling me, but I remember some of it as well, that the I just felt like I told my parents, oh, I want to be a priest. And so probably for about 2 years there, it's like, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Then our family ended up moving out to Las Vegas or Henderson, Nevada. And at that time I was going into seventh grade. And yeah, come on in, Father Al. I was going into seventh grade, and that the idea kind of disappeared then. Junior high, high school, we were very involved in the parish. Our family, one of the first things we did was find St. Thomas More Catholic Community. And, but it wasn't like, oh, okay, I still want to pursue this. Well, I would say it was in college that I got involved at the Newman Center at UNLV, University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Some of our young adults out in Las Vegas know it well, including Kai Guerrero. And so I got involved there, and there was a sister, a Franciscan sister named Karen Krause, and she was the director of the program. And she would get different priests in every weekend. And I started going, oh, wow, there's different priests, different types of people. And then I think it was through that, through me looking at becoming an educator, realizing that all of my spare time was involved either at the Newman Center in college or helping out at St. Thomas More with youth ministry, that somewhere along the line it dawned on me that I could dedicate my life to this. And within that, and through my friends, I encountered the Viatorians more concretely and went, oh my gosh, there's a whole community of men who do this. And I won't bore you with all the gory details of that, but it was kind of a merging of my desires, my spirituality, and what I was attracted to do in ministry, that the Viatorians and God, I think, found me, and through that, the invitation came.
Great. Ryan, you want to take a spin?
Yes. So I think mine is very different from kind of a little bit different than from what you two are saying. I think mine, I went to kind of similar to Brother Peter. I grew up in Onyx Knights, and was belonged to St. James, went to St. Vider for high school, went to St. James for grade school. So kind of near the end of my high school career, I really was not ever thinking of religious life. Like, I definitely had meaningful communal prayer and personal prayer experiences at St. Vider and at St. James. But there's no one moment that really drew me out. But I think the seed was planted at St. Vider High School of this is a very home. This is where I feel at home. And it kind of took me 4 years of college to kind of realize that, the cliche, but like to kind of come back home, to realize that this is a place that I'm called to be. So I ended up going to the University of Michigan, majoring in neuroscience, and thinking I was going to be pre-med. And I think throughout that, the kind of call or the kind of thinking about religious life kind of came from looking at the root of my call to look at or pursue pre-med. And so through conversations with Brother John, through conversations with my friends and family, the root of the pre-med, and I think the root of healing, the root of helping, the root of being a part of someone's life and journey, looking at that and spending a lot of time reflecting on that, it kind of led me organically to looking at religious life. And I think something that I had to do and kind of come to terms with once I went and left the Northwest suburbs of Chicago and went to Ann Arbor, Michigan, was just kind of owning my faith. And once I was able to do that, kind of personalize it and still have that communal experience at Mass and through discussions of faith, I think I was really able to seek out God's call for me.
So maybe now we can go off of going in order and kind of branch out into different areas where you guys might have different insights or memories. I'm thinking one place that could be helpful for people who are discerning things now or trying to find God's invitation now is, in retrospect, do you see any particular people who you can identify now as having had a really positive influence on you, or who were able to catch you in the right moment or in the right way and offer you the right sort of questions or invitations or opportunities or even, you know, advice or wisdom or recommendations, thinking back to the different folks who might have impacted your discernment, maybe clearer now than in the moment?
Yeah, one comes to, I mean, a bunch come to mind, but when I was in college, I was so focused on getting the best grades that I could get. That's all I wanted to do. I wanted to get really good grades, and I wanted to have, you know, a resume so I could apply, similar to Ryan, so I could apply to medical school. Like, that was what I cared about. And there was a monastery across the street that was the sponsor of the school that I went to, Benedictine University. And there was a monk, Brother Rick Poro, who was one of the campus ministers. And when I was a junior, we had kind of connected together through, you know, Mass and stuff like that, that he said, you know, have you ever thought about helping at the food pantry on Saturdays? So sounds like a good idea. And I remember I went, and it was one in the western suburbs, and seeing the people come in and seeing kids and families was kind of like a wake-up call. And then from there, I started to do that kind of regularly. He invited me to do this kind of spring break kind of mission trip to Hopkins Park or Pembroke, Illinois, to kind of see in a way the poverty of this place in Kankakee, Illinois, and to get to meet some of the people there. And I remember I went with my friends to a few food pantries. We just went to people's, you can call them houses, but I mean, it was basically there were four walls and, you know, a place to go to the bathroom, not even like a kitchen. And I had really never seen anything like that. And to think about it in like kind of rural Illinois was kind of like, oh, this is different. This is unexpected. There was a moment on this mission trip that was kind of like the wake-up call. God bless Brother Rick, but he didn't tell us that we were going to be like, there weren't any beds. And so there was just this tile floor in an empty room, and I had a pillow and a thin blanket. And so I had to sleep on this tile floor. So by like the fourth day of not getting any sleep, I was like, all right, I'm kind of miserable. So physically feeling kind of miserable or like run down and tired, but on the inside, I was like, there was this joy there in meeting people and seeing something that I wasn't exposed to. And so I think of Brother Rick in a way inviting me to connect to people who were in need and people who were suffering, that it kind of helped me to see where God was kind of inviting me, who he was inviting me to be, or at least recognize who he was calling me to be.
Yeah, for me, I think there was a two-phase piece here as well. It was sometime when I was in college, I lived at home and went to school. And like most people at UNLV do, University of Never Leaving Vegas, you go to high school, you graduate, you go to college, you still live in your same childhood bedroom. And so I was studying elementary education, knew I wanted to help kids. I knew that was a part of my call. There was something deep inside of me on that. I knew that. I wasn't able to quite put it all together. But I would also go to Mass with my parents or with my at the Newman Center. So anyway, at some point I was saying, okay, I'm Catholic. I've been going to Mass every week. I go with my family, met some new friends, but I really need to try to figure out what this is for myself. So due to a D in sociology my sophomore year, now this isn't an excuse to get a D, but God definitely was working through that. Apparently, one of the life lessons I learned is don't take a 7:30 a.m. class, especially if you don't intend on going to it, and then expect a good grade. So I get a D, and of course it was the teacher's fault, absolutely the teacher's fault. And I'm like, oh, darn it, D does not stand for diploma in education. You have to have a C or higher, not even a C minus, but a C or higher. I'm like, darn it, I got to take it over in the summer. So fine. I go and I take the summer school class in sociology again. And in that class is this guy, Ryan Hall. And I don't know why, but prior to that, I never really ever talked to anybody in my classes because I would leave home, I'd go to classes, I'd go to work, I'd come home, I'd volunteer, whatever. College wasn't quite my scene. But for whatever reason, we kind of hit it off. And so that fall, or as fall semester was coming, Ryan said, hey, the Newman Center, because he was a part of it, and I was kind of like, oh, here's a young person about my age who's also interested in looking at what the faith is about. He says, hey, we go and feed people who are hungry at the Catholic Worker House in downtown Las Vegas. You want to come with me? I go, yeah, sure. Why not? You know, budding friendship and everything. He goes, yeah, we'll meet at 5 o'clock on Friday. So, oh, okay, great. I get off of work at like 4. He goes, no, a.m. Okay, sure. So I got up before God, because God's not awake that early, and we meet at the Newman Center, and there's a whole bunch of people. There was a Dominican priest named Father Anthony. There was Sister Karen, who I just mentioned before, and a bunch of students, and we all pile into these cars, drive right along the strip as the lights are still on because it's dark. We go to this house in the middle of basically, there's crack houses all around. It's one of the most challenged neighborhoods in Las Vegas. And it's this old house built in the 1920s, probably. And there's a group of Catholic workers there, like making soup in the morning, which was kind of strange to me. But then we load these gigantic pots into this trailer. This trailer follows this like 1984 Dodge Reliant. And we go to this park, and we're serving people who are hungry and homeless. And I remember just being so terrified about it. These were bums. These were I've driven by this part of the city, I don't know how many times. There's in Vegas, there's two major freeways that go by, the US 95 and I-15. And this is like right there. And I'd driven it hundreds of times, never knew this area existed. And it kind of bothered me. It really bothered me. It scared me. But for some reason, I would go back week after week with a community of people, with this new community to me of the Newman Center, but also with the Catholic worker people. I remember first starting being terrified, and I took the job of pouring coffee. So I would just have the dip the pitcher in this big vat of coffee, grab the cup, pour it, not look up, and hand it back. After about 4 weeks, I was able to go, good morning. And then after a while, I was able to reach out to people and actually start to have conversations with them. And I think that experience of being surrounded by friends, being surrounded by religious leaders who I also saw at Mass, one who was presiding at it, the other one who was offering different spiritual ways of looking at the upcoming scripture and bringing prayer into the everyday life. And these Catholic worker people, Gary and Julia, who have dedicated their lives to feeding the hungry, literally living in the worst neighborhood in Las Vegas. Something clicked there, and I was able to start to see people who I would have labeled as bums, as drains on society, as, wow, these are real people. Wow, something's happening inside of me as I am able to provide a simple thing as a cup of coffee or a bowl of soup or some sort of nourishment. And I really believe that those experiences that I was not only invited to, but I responded positively to in the context of being with friends who I'm still friends with to this day, 20 some years later, that was God messing with my life. And well, here I am, and God continues to mess with my life, but I look forward to it.
Well said. Do you want to identify any people in retrospect or in present even, Ryan?
Yeah, because
it's unfolding.
It's still unfolding, exactly. Yeah, there's three people that kind of come to mind, and one kind of circles back to kind of the first question. The first is Sister Faustina Furco. She was one of my youth ministers. She's a nun of the Sister of the Holy Family of Nazareth, I'm pretty sure. And she was my youth minister when I was in high school at Vider. She worked at St. James. And we did a youth ministry trip. We did a youth trip up to St. Paul, Minnesota. And it was me up front and her driving, and everyone else was asleep because we had just finished the week long of service. We were heading back to Arlington Heights. And she asked me, she's like, have you ever considered religious life or ordination? And I was like, at the moment, I was like, no, I haven't thought about it at all. But it's one of those questions where I think it just kind of freezes you at that moment. You're like, why is this person saying this? What does this person see? What do they mean by this? So I think it's one of those questions where it's like that moment always kind of sticks with you. And she's kind of continuously, we don't keep as much contact now because she's off in New York doing amazing things. But that moment always kind of sticks with me as a moment like, oh my gosh, that's definitely a small fork in the road. And then the other two, the other one that really kind of tangentially helped me was Father Bill Savasky. He was a pastor at St. James for a long while. And he was someone that really, when I was seriously discerning, kind of helped me break the stereotype of like, it's not really a stereotype. I think it's just kind of a misconception of like, there's just, you're just ruggedness when you're in religious life or you're in diocesan life. It's just like, it's the same thing every day. There's no joy. And you talk to him and it's just, he exudes joy. he gave a homily a week ago, and he said, whenever I walk into a grocery store and people ask me how I am, he said, I'm blessed. And like, that's kind of how I feel this year has been. It's been a blessed year. It's been a great year. And I've been able to even experience the joy in even the stressful or annoying moments. And I think the last person that really has touched this journey and kind of really sparked, fully ignited the fire within me to kind of pursue this religious vocation is my first spiritual director up in Ann Arbor. He was a Jesuit, but Father Jim, he really kind of challenged me in ways that I needed to be challenged, but also affirmed me in when I was feeling unsure or kind of stuck within myself. I think the pressure and feeling like not adequate was something that I definitely had to work through. And he just like, or the pressure of making the wrong decision. And he just kind of said one meeting, he's like, you can't make a wrong decision here. There is no wrong decision between the choices that you have. So that kind of gave me the freedom to kind of go and explore this. And it's been great ever since.
One of the interesting things is, I think if we did another round or two, you guys would probably work your way to a Viatorian brother or priest or associate who is involved in some way. But you guys are all talking about people from other religious communities or from your home parishes or from your campus life who had a positive influence and ultimately pointed you toward religious life well before you even knew that that was maybe God's invitation for you. So it's interesting to think in retrospect where the influence is coming from outside of maybe the more narrow lane you end up in down the road, which I think is just fascinating. And it reflects kind of the mysteriousness of God's grace in a positive way. I wonder if kind of building on the positive influence and people calling you beyond maybe your natural comforts or where you're naturally kind of drawn to go, how might you say now, either in retrospect or as your spiritual life continues to unfold, how do you deal with doubt or the idea that maybe what I'm feeling drawn toward might not be the right thing or the best thing? We often talk about discernment is discernment because it's trying to figure out the path between two potential probable goods. It's not like choosing between having ice cream or a pile of dirt for dessert. It's usually choosing between two attractive things that have different pros and cons. How do you guys think, either in retrospect or in current practice, that you would try to tackle doubts or skepticisms or roadblocks that pop up as you try to identify where you think God's inviting you? Yeah. Easy question, right?
Yeah, I think it kind of goes back to what Peter was saying earlier and explicated in a better way than I could. But like, I think in college, he kind of talked about that narrow focus that he had toward grades. And I think that the same focus that I had. But I reference a story because I think the story captures it like perfectly of like kind of the transformation. I don't want to say transformation, but the change that's happened this year, the positive change that's happened within myself this year is so me and a couple other young coworkers at Vider this past year, St. Vider High School, we were invited to come and go and talk to the ethics classes near the end of the year about the college transition to a bunch of people that are still transitioning now in their life. So it was kind of ironic, but one of the questions that we had that a student wrote down in the note card was, is it okay if I really have no idea what I'm doing going into college? I have no idea what I'm going to do, no idea what I'm really interested in yet. And I took that question. I said, my 18-year-old self would have judged you and looked down upon you. My 23-year-old self is saying you're doing it exactly right. And I think the doubt comes from that lack of like taking the like narrow like glasses off and that like myopic kind of narrow view. So I think to kind of eliminate the doubt, kind of taking off the glasses that just allow for tunnel vision and kind of see the whole gamut of things that are possible really helped me and continues to help me. So I think to kind of go back to that is just kind of really talk to people with all the possibilities that are out there and avoid that narrow tunnel vision sense when talking about the possibilities for your life.
The I'll get all biblical here, historical. The Jewish way of looking at scripture, or even looking at life, is looking at what happens in life is as if you're walking backwards. We can't see what's happening behind us. So we walk backwards. And as we walk backwards, we see what happened. And then if we turn around, we're still not going to be able to see what's going to happen. And I think looking back on my life, walking backwards, looking back at where everything has happened, I think I had serious questions or doubts as I was emerging out of high school into college and out of college into the potential real world, so to speak. And it was actually right out of college that I joined the Viatorians. And as I look at those parts of my life, look back at that, I think there were some doubts, but I was more looking at, all right, what's the adventure here? In fact, part of my pre-novitiate experience, I was in a pre-novice for 2 years, 1 year here in the Chicago area, the next year in Belize, Central America. My experiences in Belize, I would actually write like the adventures of me. And I think I've always looked at my life as an adventure, as a, what's happening next? There's not a lot of fear there. There have been some moments of fear for sure. But as I look back, it's like, I don't have any doubt. And I think this comes from good mentorship early on, like when I was in college, mostly from my friends who were people who identified themselves as those who turned to prayer. Now, I would say pre-20-year-old John didn't really know what prayer was, but because I was surrounded by these strong friends who did, I learned from them. And so any doubts that I have, I bring it to prayer. I know that sounds so cliche, but I just kind of trust, like, God, you got me into this mess. It's your job to get me out of it. And you will. And I trust that. One example, the most recent ministry that I'm doing is I had no desire to ever become a high school administrator, ever. And 2.5 years ago, the provincial said, well, we need somebody at St. Viator High School to be the vice president of Viatorian Identity and Mission. Will you take it? And I paused for a moment and I kind of had to answer relatively quickly. And I remember just going, well, if you see something in me that you trust, if you know who I am, and you're asking me to do this, I can't find a good reason to say no. I'll give it a try. And also the sense of, okay, God, if this is what you want me to do, then you better do something about it. You better help me out here. So I think I've had a shift in attitude from my late teens through my formation process of, I don't really worry about doubt, even though there are doubts there. Like some mornings I wake up like, wait a minute, is this God thing real? Sometimes that just pops in your head and it's like, okay, maybe we'll keep going. Or if I do question it, almost immediately there's somebody or something that happens that answers the question of, yes, this is real. So it's not so much doubt. I guess it's more faith for me.
come up with some good questions here, Dan. The doubt one, you know, when I was initially kind of 2 years out of college, I'm discerning religious life and I'm kind of discerning which community. I looked at the Archdiocese, thought about the Benedictines, and then it's amazing how it works. I was sitting down with all my sisters and my brother and my parents, and they said, we want you to look at the Viatorians. We think this is where you really need to invest your, you know, they didn't use the word discernment, but basically said, we all went to school there. We all, you know, my dad coached there for years, and this is where you grew up. Doesn't it make sense? I mean, that's what they said. So it's kind of amazing. So, I mean, my family was the ones who really kind of invited me, saying, you need to look at the Viatorians. Oh, okay. In those like kind of 9 months where I would go and spend time doing some volunteering and dinner for prayer, that I guess that doubt of, is this the community for me? Could it be another community? Maybe religious life isn't, you know, it's like a daily, almost like hourly type of thing where you're like, you want to like, almost a way you think if you work and work and work, you may get at that answer. If I work hard enough and long enough, I'm going to get there. And then the realization of that certitude is never going to happen. That was kind of, it was almost like a blessing, but also like, okay. At the end of the day, there's going to have to be some sort of trust, some sort of faith of, hey, you don't see the full picture, but know that I'm guiding you here. Part of that was my family. Part of that was different experiences I was having with the Viatorians and volunteering and so forth. But I made that choice to enter the pre-novitiate with a significant amount of, I would say, like lack of certitude. I don't know if this is going to work out, but it seemed, God, this seems to be where you want me to be. So the doubt was definitely, or wrestling with that doubt, or in other words, maybe it's not doubt, or the uncomfortability of not having certainty or certitude or the unknown, where it's, they can almost be, you know, it's kind of fluid there. Now, the doubts are a little different of like, if you were to just read the news about the church, stop going to mass. Stop going to mass because it's dying. You know, young people don't care about it. So it's like, the doubt is the fruit of just, you know, let's analyze the data, so to speak, that data. But I think when you go to mass and you're a part of a community of faith, that people you're journeying with, there seems, at least for me, I get a sense of God sees something, the things that we don't. I think he sees the seeds that are there and the life that is there. And in a way, it's the faith that there's something deeper happening that I can't see. And you have to be comfortable, at least for me, I got to be comfortable with not seeing the big picture, that God's at work, regardless of what maybe people will be saying. So not to say that I can't fall into kind of negativity or even cynicism about certain things, but I think it goes to what Brother John was saying. Prayer, going into prayer, that's what I think feeds the faith, feeds the trust. Also, like just noticing the desires, what are the kind of the deeper desires in my life, when it's more of that kind of self-doubt about maybe my abilities and feeling inadequate about a task. Hey, go teach this. I've never taught that before. So
go administer this. Yeah, I've never administered anything.
One way I heard it put on a vocation panel once that included people in various states of life is a married man said, it sort of helps to de-romanticize discernment and vocation a bit. He said, you know, movies or TV or books or, you know, fictions make you want to think that a soulmate is a once in a lifetime moment where your path crosses with another person's path. And if you guys don't both realize it at the same time, your ships pass in the night and then you're both, you know, star-crossed for the rest of your lonely lives. He's like, but that's not how life works, right? Like, there's probably a lot of different things and a lot of different outcomes in which we could thrive and be happy and do well. But ultimately it comes down to trying to like pray, reflect, talk with loved ones, people who trust, who love you and care about you, and work your way towards your deepest, clearest understanding of what God's invitation is. So it's kind of leaning into doubt rather than shying away from it and accepting that you'll never have like a printed script for what your, you know, surefire best route is, but that if you're making a good faith effort and you're living your best community life, you're probably going to find a lot of love and fulfillment and the right things that God is calling you towards by putting all that together. And another friend who described it like doubt is a sacrament if you treat it the right way. It's a way of revealing God's grace and where God is pointing you towards and what he's trying to show you. But if you're afraid of doubt or you turn it into a fearsome kind of complex, then it kind of compounds itself and tears you away from those opportunities. So it's good when you can identify those ways that prayer and relationship can point you towards more clarity rather than deeper fear. It's a lot of sense.
Dan, just one more thing. And it's just kind of, just thinking about my own spiritual life over the last few years, I've kind of noticed the antidote to the effects of fixating on doubt, at least for me, I found of gratitude for me of, have I stepped back and tried to identify where God has been in my life today? Have I done that? Or have I just been so focused on trying to get things done? I got to get this done. Have I stepped back and said, oh, wow, that was a great conversation today. Or, wow, that class really went well. Or, this morning when I was having my cup of coffee, wow, the sunrise was beautiful. Or, wow, dinner was, it was great to hear the stories about the guys doing ministry today. And taking that time at the end of the day in a way that kind of examine of what am I grateful for and where has God been in my life? Where if I'm kind of negative, I know when I'm kind of negative or having those kind of negative thoughts or kind of the doubt of, yeah, I know I'm not taking that time to really sit with God and let God sit with me and identify those kind of where God is working in my life.
You know, I think that's one of the things for me that when I do have the, like my day is not going well, or maybe I'm praying in the morning, which I do pretty much every morning and in the evening, there's the middle of the day where half the time or most of the time I go, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, this is about Jesus. I forget about it. Why do I forget about it? I do the sign of the cross. I pray. I am a religious. I do all of that, yet I still forget about it. And so when I realize that I forget about it, it's like, okay, God, what's your invitation right now? And that's a scary question to ask because I know that there's an invitation right around the corner. And maybe that's where the fear is I don't want to ask God to invite me to something. But if I am constantly reminding myself, this is where daily prayer comes in. If I keep that rhythm going, then I might be reminded that every moment of the day is God working through the people around me or the environment around me, the sunset or whatever. I think it's when I lose sight of the everyday, living in the present moment is when I get lost. And also, I think it's when I'm not inviting God to invite me, it's like, inviteception or something like that, that my focus goes way into the future. What am I going to be? Where am I going to be? Who am I going to be with? How will it happen? That doesn't matter. And will I be able to, what I'm doing now, will I be able to perfect it so I'm good at it then? I don't think God even gives a crap about that. I think it's, we miss the point if we're doing that. I'm not called to be a perfect person. I'm not called to be somebody who has it figured out. If I wait for that, then I'm just going to be waiting. And God has people who need whatever gifts I have to respond to them, and I just won't be able to do that. So I think that's the invitation, is to just hit the reset button every time. Like, oh, wait, yeah, okay, God's in this moment too. Oh, God's in this moment too. Okay, where do I see you today, God?
Yeah, like you need to reset from a productivity mindset or an accomplishment mindset. Think more about how can I be faithful to or present to the people and the community and the ministry that I'm called to do. So thinking of time a little bit, thought it'd be good to ask maybe one new question and go around the horn a little. If you guys think about living life in the 2020s with the way that technology and social media have proliferated across our lives and the way it's impacted how we spend our time, how we interact with each other, maybe how we practice our prayer and spirituality, not just in parish life, but individually, do you have any advice or insights or recommendations on how you in kind of this decade and this age recommend that people maintain a rich prayer life, maintain a spiritual life, and give themselves kind of the parameters or the context in which they can do faithful discernment and maybe have a better chance, better framework they can find God's invitation? Maybe we'll start with you, Ryan.
Yeah, I think like two or three things kind of come to mind. I think first, it's going to kind of plagiarize from Brother John a little bit, but I think I think keep the prayer life very simple. Like I think one of the things that I do every day is I'm working my way through the Gospels right now, and I'll take a scripture passage, whatever, wherever I'm at in the Gospel, and I'll kind of just sit with it for like 15, 20 minutes, either silent prayer if I'm not doing that, then there's this app called the Divine Reading app, Divine Office app, and it has the Liturgy of the Hours, and you can kind of, it's not as communal as being live with your family or other religious, but you have people responding to the same prayers that you would be going through if you were doing it live with people with you. So I think keeping your prayer life very simple, and also with that is not expecting that grand, amazing moment that God's going to come down in a chariot. Like that. I don't really think a lot of people have that, but I think sometimes I slip into that like expectation of that in my prayer. And then two other things I think that really helped me is for discernment and or just like practicing the faith in the 21st century. I had to think there for a second which century we're in. But is just, I think being open to conversations. I don't really think people are always searching for like on a walk or on like out to dinner, like a deep conversation about the theology of the body. I don't really think that, but like being curious about their life, his or her life, being open about your experiences of prayer and or the practice of the faith. I know for me, sharing with people that I'm thinking about doing this opens up a very interesting dialogue. I think people are bursting at the seams to talk and have these conversations. So I think being open to having those conversations when people are, or when that other person is open to having the conversation. And lastly, I think what we're doing right now, I think being connected to the new media through podcasts, through different seminars on YouTube, I think it's awesome. And the one thing I think you'll find is that there are multiple different ways of practicing. And they're all appropriate. And it's kind of our job, I think, as religious to be a mirror and be a bouncing switchboard to kind of be like, yeah, this is that's awesome. That's the way that you do it. But this is how I kind of look at it, and kind of being a mirror back toward them. So.
I can't believe I wouldn't have said this years ago, but I will say it now. I do think Twitter and Instagram and, you know, other platforms of social media can be an avenue, a good avenue at times, to proclaim Jesus Christ and his gospel. I do. It's interesting. Instagram kind of, based on what you engage, kind of as an algorithm or whatever, and kind of puts together, you know, what you would want to see based on what you engage with. So it'd be kind of, that'd be kind of an interesting, like, almost immediate examine. What do you engage with? You know, what do I engage with by what's being populated there? But I kind of like some of it. There are a lot of different, either individuals or even groups or organizations that are creating content that, whether it's, you know, quoting saints or quoting scripture of the day, or it's a little video of a reflection, you can find stuff, little stuff to kind of perhaps, like what Brother John was saying, remind you of, hey, what is this all about? Having said that, I don't think anything can replicate that kind of time of just you, God, in silence, in prayer, taking that time, and also like praying in community. We don't have enough time for it now, but even my own spiritual life, the most profound experiences I've had of God have always been in a group with other people, praying with others. There's a dynamic that I think happens that even can't happen when it's just kind of you sitting alone. So I do think, yeah, Twitter can be very informative about what's going on. Instagram can be, in a way, spiritual nourishing if you kind of are seeking out that content. But it's also like the core. And Father Curbs was kind of like a no frills, kind of what I like about him. The word, the sacrament, we work with young people, we participate in people's lives. That can't be kind of replicated. The digital stuff can kind of maybe make us more aware at times, or good reminders, or maybe even be, you know, informative about stuff. But the kind of the fundamentals of sacrament, serving people, I don't think anything can replicate the kind of the core stuff. So
last night, Peter and I were with two young men who are discerning religious life, particularly with the Viatorians. And we met in person for the first time. And everything else since October has been on Zoom. So I have a prayer timer app. It's a Tibetan bell that you hit and you can set the time for it. And so I hit it. And one of them goes, wait a minute, when we were on Zoom, was it always digital? And I go, no, I actually have a real Tibetan bell, but I think that's talking, there are things in this world that maybe are new to the 21st century, like a Tibetan bell or a Bible that actually has pages and you hold it in your hand, or liturgy of the hours where you flip. I think the digital stuff points towards the holy, or can point towards it. For me, it doesn't replace it. It's a good placeholder. If I'm traveling, I'm going to read the liturgy or pray the liturgy of the hours on an iPad or an iPhone. But there's nothing like kind of seeing what week am I in, wherever that ribbon is. It's the passage of time that happens there. I don't mean to be like a boomer, because I'm not, I'm Gen X, but at the end of Gen X too. But it's like sometimes the social media piece, is you don't see the passage of time, or you don't see the parts you don't like. However, for me, the way I really am able to dive in and know I'm loved by God and also invited by God is getting my butt outside. Being in nature, in uninterrupted nature, I would call it, is where I most clearly experience God's love or God's voice. And it's not necessarily an audible thing, but it is a miraculous thing of all this plant life, all these rock formations or geological formations or animal life. Most often when I'm going intentionally going for a prayer walk or a prayer hike, something comes in, something catches my attention. And then at that point, I pull out the phone and like post something on Instagram because I'm trying to capture that piece and sharing it with others. But I think it's the simplicity of things. It's a book. It's a bell. It's an actual flame. It's oxygen. It's my eyesight in what's out there in the natural world that, or it's a conversation that I'm hearing where God really snags.
Yeah, one of the ways I like to kind of shorthand social media and technology is as long as it's supplementing or complementing an actual human relationship or an actual community, I think it's doing something good. But when it starts to creep into replacing a Bible or a book of prayer or a walk in nature, then I think that's where we get trouble. So I think when we can use it as a complement to our interpersonal relationships and our community lives, that's where it's at its best. Just my two cents. So any other kind of like final passing nuggets of wisdom that you guys want to offer into our little happy meal here before we close up shop?
I just know that God's inviting everybody to something all the time.
I like to always say discernment is different from decision-making because sometimes you're just deciding between something good and something bad. Discernment invites prayer and deeper conversation and reflection because you're usually trying to split hairs between two good options like neuroscience and pre-novitiate or, yes. You know, two different career paths or two different places you could relocate or two different majors you could declare at college. And it's that prayer and that dependence on those close relationships and on the presence of God and those friendships and family relationships that kind of help you get to that 51-49 moment where you can say, this is the path I'm going to walk down and I'm going to go forward with, you know, full faith-filled confidence.
And Dan, when you make a decision, that's you. When you're discerning, you cannot do that alone. It's impossible to discern alone. You have to have community around you to help you do that. And I think that's what Eucharist is about too, is we can't have Eucharist by ourselves. So discernment is a holy thing.
Yeah, I think my last comment just kind of goes back to what Peter was saying earlier. I think two of the things that really have helped me during this whole year of the pre-novitiate and really helped me during my like very serious discernment time were gratitude and admiration. I think one of the things that particularly the pre-med mind gets like so warped with is that like false race mentality, which is just like you think you're in a race with everyone else when exactly like there is no race happening at all. So I think one of those things that I had to kind of come to terms with now that I'm seeing a lot of my friends that I was in college with, going off to medical school or going off to various grad schools, Stanford, Johns Hopkins, all these very well-renowned places, is kind of saying like, instead of being like envious, instead of feeling like I'm not enough because I'm not doing that, it's an admiration of like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. Like, congratulations, Tosin. Congratulations, Sammy. Congratulations, whoever. And that is one of the things that's kind of brought me peace through this whole process. It's like, I may not be doing that, but like what I am doing is not bad. And is equal in meaning in my life. Admiration has been a key thing for me.
That's all for this installment of Roundtables on the Way. We'd like to thank Brother John, Brother Peter, and Ryan for their insights in our discussion, and to the young adults who attended the event and engaged in our discussion. To learn more about our young adult ministry, follow our social media at Viatorian USA, or email the Young Adult Board at viatorianya@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you about your ideas for podcasts and events and have you involved in our community life. Viatorian Voices, Conversations on the Way is a production of Viatorian Vocation Ministry. The Viatorians are professed brothers and priests, together with lay associates, who proclaim Jesus Christ and his gospel and raise communities where faith is lived, deepened, and celebrated. In the footsteps of Venerable Louis Kerbs and under the patronage of St. Vider, we strive to do everything well so that through us, Jesus may be adored and loved. To learn more about our community, visit Viatorians.com or follow us on social media at ViatorianUSA. Those seeking support and accompaniment in understanding God's invitation for them are invited to reach out to Vocation Ministry. Send us a DM on social media or email vocations@viatorians.com to start a conversation. On behalf of Brother John and the Viatorian community, I'm Dan Masterton. St. Vider, pray for us. Adored and loved be Jesus.